Good evening, and you're very welcome to the Town End podcast. It's episode 34. Well, it's stalemate in the RSC as Dundalk draw with Waterford in 1-1. Look, it's nothing great. I think our second half display was pretty stale, would be one way to describe it. I think to go through the game tonight, we have Gally, and joining us also is Kieran. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. What do we make of tonight's performance? Gally, I'll go to you first.
Without at the risk of just getting stuck in straight away, we sat here to start a podcast.
Before. No point holding back now, Gally. Hang on.
We're 34 episodes in. Somebody's going to let loose at some stage. At the start of the season, we had this issue where we couldn't get going. So in games, we'd start so slowly. And then maybe 20 minutes in, we might get a gear. But maybe the 70, maybe we'd be on fifth gear maybe. But tonight, we actually started better. We started well. We got an early goal. Look, it's a good ball from Kelly, but it's a scrappy enough goal. But following that, it's kind of just, not to just glaze over the first half. The second half, and I don't think I'm exaggerating. It could be just emotions out of the match. It's one of the worst second halves, I think. There's a couple of bad second halves we played all season, a couple of bad games, but that's got to be right up there with some of them. I think, look, I know we have boys injured. We have boys, you know, Stanton had a great game at left back. You know, I find it hard to believe there's nobody that can play left back and in order not to miss Stanton in the centre of the park. Yeah. But I mean, with the team they've assembled, the numbers they've assembled, we can talk about players' wages, we can talk about all that, but that's not the players' fault. Contracts are contracts. Yeah. But these boys should be well up for a game at Waterford. I mean, a 1-1 draw in Waterford is bad at any stage of the season, but it's really not when you need it now. Like, if we put up, before we come on air, Chris, you put up the table. If we put it up tonight, people might throw their laptops and tellies at the window. We're really in it now. We're really mixing it with the lowest of the low in this league. And it's just as well Longford have had a worse season than us. It's just as well they've had such a poor run because we'd be rock bottom. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And we kind of joked a couple of weeks ago, these games, these last three games, we kind of said the 11th of September was going to be D-Day. Now, look, we were kind of hoping that wasn't going to be the case, but next week's game now is... Like, you trade the cup final for it, you know, for 3 points. Like, that's what we are at the minute. I mean, you know, it's... It was so poor the second half. Like, I don't even know how you analyse it. I really don't. I mean, Kieran, look, it's nice to have somebody like Kieran on. Somebody's not on the podcast that often, but it's nice to get somebody else in. But I'm probably going to let him go in first because if I start too early, the badger might get on my laptop.
Yeah, just real quick then, I suppose, Kieran, just before we start picking the game apart, just overall, what did you make of it?
I'm still at odds at how, when you look at the contrast of the two halves, how Dundalk were extremely strong in control, particularly in midfield in the first half. Then the second half comes along, Waterford make changes, but they made changes with impact. Like, these players that they brought on, like they had an impact in the game, whereas Dundalk subs, now I'm it takes an awful lot for me to criticize players. Both in a public and a private matter, it does take me an awful lot. But the substitutes that Dundalk made didn't have an overall effect on the terms of the tempo of the game, whereas Waterford did. Yeah. And, like, you know, you just have to look at the manner in which Waterford really, they smelled blood in the second half. They really, really did. Dundalk played very deep. And that kind of flashpoint where Dan Cleary got the yellow card and then O'Keefe and Holborn got one, like, that was kind of the boiling point. But it's those kind of moments in games where teams' momentum starts to take control. And in that regards, Waterford took complete control of proceedings from there on and completely pegged Dundalk in. And the problem was that then it became inconsistencies, it became fouls, it became unnecessary free kicks. All of these meant that there was increased pressure on the back four. Daniel Cleary, you're not too sure whether he was put in there despite the fact, was he 100% fit coming back from what has been a long-term injury? Then you're looking at the fact that, you know, Sam Stanton's playing at left back, a completely unnatural position. And then you have, like, the only thing I will say is that Cameron Dumigan, like, he's Mr., like, as someone said, he's like Mr. Dennis Irwin. He's 7 out of 10. You know, like, he never fails you. But the fact is that you're effectively playing with a disjointed back four that's under increasing pressure. And Alessio Abebe, now I know he's had every critic in the country after him, but there were times tonight where catching the ball would have been much easier than punching it. It's very evident now that his punching ability does not clear as far as he thinks it was. Yeah. Like I said it, and I did a pre-match kind of thing for Dundalk FC today. I was all for Cameron Yates getting the Gnad. I don't think Cameron Yates put a foot wrong. I know it was against St. Marcus last week, but you know, we had this at the start of the year where there was the consistent chopping and changing. I think Cameron Yates was brought in with a reason.
Yeah.
I think Vinny has to make that call now and sit down. I think what he has to do now is that he's put Cameron Yates as number one for the entire week with the back four training and saying, Cameron, look, this is your chance. And there's no better game than against Longford, because that's the kind of game that at this the back four needs to have someone behind them that they know 100% is going to catch the ball, make the calls, do the communication, everything like that. And I don't think Alessio's doing that to an effect maybe Cameron Yates would. Like, Cameron Yates has played at a very high standard. Like, he's played with Leicester, he's played with Wycombe Wanderers. I know they got relegated last year, but that standard is Championship. Like, that's still higher than what we're playing at the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, he really should be in there now, because he's been training with Championship players, he's been playing with Premiership players. That guy knows what it takes to play at a high standard. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, and I think just on the Abebe, I thought there was a little spell in the mid-season when he kind of had, you know, a couple of good games. And did he get man of the match with us one night? I'm not sure. He was very close.
Yeah.
I know that's gone back probably 6 years, but like when you made, like the goal tonight, it was almost slow motion. It was just what time are we? Can I use bad language?
You're 22-26.
So, my father would say he doesn't know whether to piss off hard. You know, he doesn't know whether to come for the ball or stay back. Like, the boys are actually shouting at him to come and get the ball. Like, if that's happening now in September and we're playing since March and you've brought in a new keeper, like, if I'm sitting on the bench there tonight, now I'm not a goalkeeper. You know, the goalkeepers on the past, Donald Green's been on, Martin Conley, Aaron McCarry was on. But if you're sitting on the bench and you can't get ahead of that, you know, when he's playing like that, don't get me wrong, he's had his great games. But you'd have to think the next game, right, look it. I have to go knock on someone's door here. I have to get a game. Like, it's you know, it's, I don't know how many, I don't know how to work it. I don't know how many goals he's cost us all season. But we can't just blame the keeper. The ball has to get that far. But communication is vital. It's vital. And he just doesn't seem to have that, that kind of, you know, governor kind of, you know, I this is my area, that type of domain. And he just doesn't seem to have that. Look, the boys are great at the back. Andy Boyle's had a good season. But, you know, when you've got someone like that behind you, it just makes the game so much more difficult for you. And I would definitely agree with, you know, Peter. I don't know, you know, Peter Cherry hasn't got a run under Vinny. Vinny obviously has a lot of time for Abebe. I don't know. But you start to have to be stubborn at some stage. He's been stubborn now with him, and he's going to have to say, look, Yates is going to have to get the nod here. You know, there is no way, like, you got to try it. There's no point waiting now. We're now playing Longford next week, which is a cup final.
But you have to remember, in 2016, I know everyone hates harping back to 2016. I know we shouldn't be doing it. But Gary Rogers was, at that stage, indispensable with Dundalk. And he had a bad performance against Sligo. I think there was a couple of other bad decision-making. And he was dropped. He was dropped in a huge game against Cork City and then against Zenit St. Petersburg. And, like, but then he came back and he was much stronger because mentally now he knew that, you know, maybe he needed a break, maybe he needed to be withdrawn just to kind of, you know, to ease the pressure valve on. And maybe the same can be said for Alessio. Maybe because there's so much pressure, so much attention being brought on him, would you not be in a better position to put someone like Cameron Yates in now at this stage, put Alessio, and then work specific on particular things without the pressure of games and see what happens? But, you know, it just seems that because there's all these games coming thick and fast, but yeah, my opinion now at this stage is that there needs to be a definitive change in goals, and it just needs to be done now. And I think you're right. There is a stubborn element to Vinny, and there always has been. You know, he's a creature of habit, as a lot of managers are. But in this instance, like, I think myself and another journalist, I won't quote him because I don't want to get in trouble, but we reckon 12 points this year a direct fall due to decisions made by Alessio Abebe. 12 points. Like, where would 12 points get us now?
Yeah, what I would say, lads, is for whatever with Abebe's indecision, we'll say for the goal, you know, there was other players that really didn't show up tonight too.
And
I think, you know, coming from, it seems to be a continental thing for the punching rather than the catching, but that should be brought in because this league is a very physical league. And if you're not up to getting battered a couple of times coming out for the ball, it's probably not the league for you, if you know what I mean. It's a very physical league, so it takes a certain type of keeper to do very well in this league. I think for that goal, he seemed to, we'll kind of go into it maybe later on, but I think he kind of came and decided and to backtrack on the line and it was gone. I think right before that, we you know, that ball could have been dispensed of before that,
of course,
as well. And when it came in, you know, we should have been heading that clear. So there's plenty of other people, not just the BB, I think, that we'd have to look at that. But to go to the very start of the game, lads, I mean, we started off in such a, you know, one of the best ways we could do it. when the ball came in and I seen Dan Kelly with, you know, first thing I thought was, God, I've missed his pace. You know, he was there. He was tricky. No one wanted to touch him. He's inside the box. That's where he's at his most dangerous, because you can touch him. He's so quick. He's slight of foot, puts the ball in. And Sean Murray, I didn't know. I thought he was going to take too many touches. And then somehow he got it out. And it just nestled in the corner. And I was delighted. But, you know, such a great start as well for us. I thought we were going to build on that, Gally. And it just unfortunately didn't seem to.
Yeah, I'm like, it's not like we didn't have chances. I mean, Waterford, the centre-half, I know Ferguson had a great game, but I can't think the centre-half. There was around half an hour into the game, a ball was played in from Kelly. And it was actually Pat Hoobin. And it almost fell at Murray's feet. It just, the defender just got across and just cleared it out for a corner. Like an unbelievable tackle. But things like that, when you're in the, I won't say a rut, but when you're having the season that Dog have, things like that don't go for you. And like, if that falls to Sean Murray's feet, it's 2-0. I mean, you wouldn't say game over the way the Dog have had their season, but you would definitely think, look, we fancy us for 3 points here. But then they just, go on, Kieran, go on.
But then momentum would have taken you.
Of course,
yeah. You know, momentum would have taken you in that position because Dundalk were in the ascendancy. And, like, Waterford had a series of chances right on half-time. But up until then, Dundalk were completely, in terms of possession. I thought Greg Slager was absolutely brilliant in midfield. I thought he broke a lot of things up. Will Patching had a quiet evening compared to his usual, but he did have a very good, like a half volley that went over the bar. Like, I'm not saying that this was all doom and gloom, but I am saying that there was opportunities there that they could have capitalised on better. And if they had done so, then this game could have been out of sight at half time. It was just that Mark Burcham was able to reorganize his side. He knew exactly what way to exploit Dundalk in the second half. And as I was saying at the start, he deployed players that made a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I mean, Gally, we were talking off air and we just thought that, you know, Burcham made those decisions to change the game. We waited till after we had conceded. I made two subs when we could see we had very little legs left in our team. Yeah, and I think if we had changed it maybe around the 70 minute mark, we might have got legs in it that we, you know, when we were trying to clear a ball, we were just knocking long, aimless balls. But we had no legs to run. I mean, Hoobin was done with running at that stage and was watching the ball, so he wasn't going to be chasing it down. And both wingers had probably run themselves into the ground at that stage. But, you know, I mean, Sammy was very unlucky not to put this 2-0, lads, with the header.
Yeah.
I think that goes anywhere else but at Murphy, and we were 2-0. And that's a sliding door moment, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And I think Sammy, in fairness to him, I know he's not at the club long. He looked leggy as well. He looked very drained in the second half. Like he just seemed to not lose pace. He just seemed to, he almost seemed to move in slow motion when the ball was at his feet. And look, he's been great up to now. But I think, like the likes of Borsham at half-time, obviously went in. He's obviously experienced at management over in England. He's obviously able to motivate these guys. And look, when you were naming two keepers on the bench, you know your squad's depleted. You know, we don't have a lot of options, but we have options. I mean, it's not like we'll pull the part that we've only got 13 players in total. I know young Hanratty was there. But I mean, these boys, look, like here I'm saying, the game could have been, or probably should have been out of sight at half time. We did have chances. But just in the second half, look, you can put it down to tiredness, but, you know, we're three quarters of the way through the season. You know, your fitness level should be at that peak. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, like I know we're talking about substitutes there, late substitutes. That used to be a trait of Stephen Kenny's as well. Stephen Kenny's like really late. He done it against Portugal the other night. He made substitutes really late when it was probably too late. You know, hindsight's great. We all have 20/20 vision, but maybe it's a thing that Finney took from him. And we do tend to make some, like, you know, being crying in Oriel Park, 75, 80 minutes, well, maybe drawn and no subs are made, and they're made in the 86th, 87th. That was a thing with Stephen Kenny. But the difference was he was probably top of the league doing it. And, you know, that's the difference. That's the gulf that we have at the minute. Like, look, at this squad is no fault of Vinny's as such. He can only play what's in front of him. But I do think that things like, you know, the goalkeeper, he has to stand fast. He's got to make a decision on that. And I hate to go back to him straight away, but that things like that could be a big difference there going forward next last couple of games.
It seemed like, lads, for a good, well, let's say about 20 minutes anyway, it seemed to be very much one-way traffic. It was long throw after free kick. I was watching it on LOI TV, and I can only assume the commentator is a great lad for Christmas, because Jesus, he loved cards. He was looking for a card for everything. Every time we made a foul, it was surely a card. And there's Andy Boyle on a yellow card. He could be getting another one. Dan Cleary couldn't wait for Dan Cleary to get a yellow card.
Yeah,
you know. So he was card happy. This, but I just thought it was excessive pressure, though. And we, you know, Gally, we mentioned it earlier this year that we're that sort of team. I think when you play against Dundalk, you just keep the pressure because we're error prone. We give away way too many free kicks, and we're going to give you that opportunity. If you have any sort of class about you, you know, and let's face it, Anthony Wordsworth is that bit of class in that team as well. And, you know, you give him that one opportunity. You could see him when he came on, he was kind of getting more and more into the ball. He wanted it. He was making them play. And then all of a sudden, bang, you know, he's the man who pops up for the goal.
But you only have to look at, like, where his position was for that free kick. Like, his head was nearly down at his knees, but, like, that's the kind of quality. He's the kind of player that will put his head where, dare I say it, where David McMillan would. Like, David McMillan puts his body where no brave person would, but that's got to do with bravery. And he knew that it was probably going to take just one opportunity, and he was probably only going to get one opportunity. Because up until this, they were getting kind of half chances, and, you know, a couple of shots went wide and stuff like that. But they just knew that when they were given an opportunity, and at that stage, they were so in the ascendancy that they were consistently putting pressure on Dundalk, that it was just going to take kind of a blink, and that was going to get them their equaliser. And I would say that on both sides, both would feel aggrieved that, yeah, we got a point out of this, but both sides would say that they had opportunities to win it, and both sides could have said that they could have won the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone keep their comments coming. We will get to the man of the match competition later on with Tony's Pizzeria. But just a comment in there just saying that our last clean sheet in the league was the 17th of July.
So that
says a lot there, you know, when we're...
I think somebody else, or is that 7 wins in 24? Am I correct on that? Mm-hmm. Somebody has someone else up as well.
I'm getting back through. Like, sorry for, there's probably a load of comments, and I'm only trying to get back around to here.
And I think it was said as well that our last win was against Levadia. Like, our last actual win as a side was against Levadia Tallinn, which is, like, crazy when you think about it.
Our league form has been absolutely atrocious of late.
Yeah. Well, actually, sorry, the Moctis game would be the last win. But if you take out in terms of that, like, you're just like...
Well, in terms of a good opponent that's on your level, I suppose.
Disrespect
to Moctis.
No, absolutely none. But, like, I think we are, and I know that a lot of people will probably be, it's a bit brave or a bit big for me, but this is now where I'd say we're at a crisis point. Like, I know that, like, I know last week you spoke about how low things have gotten. This is now, I think, officially crisis point, because you have a side that at the beginning of the year, before Mark Bertram came in, were seen as the cannon fodder for the entire league. They were completely at sea, completely at loss with each other. And now they're a side that is complete, like, they've gotten a new manager and a new owner. And while I don't want to kind of get into the whole optics, but I just looked at a tweet he posted, like, earlier on in the week. And he just, it's Richard Forrest. He goes, okay, when I first bought this sleeping giant of a club, everyone kept telling me, win some games, get a good run, get players on long-term, get the manager in on a long-term. So that's all done. So on Friday, we are playing and we have a good allocation, 2,500. I've done my bit. Over to you. And he called out the people of Waterford.
Wow.
Guys, I have no problem in saying this. That's exactly what Dundalk were doing 2 to 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That is exactly that. He's now looking at a whole community, trying to get this community of Waterford behind this club. And while I don't want to harp on what's going on at Oriel, but like that community element has been complete. The soul has been completely ripped out of Dundalk at the moment. And it's scary. It's really, really scary. And something has to change. Has to change big time. Otherwise, we are going to be a loss. Now, I don't think we're going to be relegated. I think it's going to be an awful scrap, but I don't think we're going to be relegated. But if you are thinking of a trip to the Aviva, I don't know. I don't think so. Not at this moment in time.
I'll happily trade it if we can.
I would as well. But the thing is that our whole model has been based on European football and European qualification, and the FAI Cup is the last ticket in town.
Yeah, I think the other worrying thing is if we take the form guide of the teams that's in this, and that's, you know, I think you've got to face up to reality and saying we are in somewhat of a relegation battle here. You know, you can say all you want about games in hand, but I always say points on the board mean a lot more than that, especially in our current form. So if we look at the teams around us, Longford, unfortunately, they're playing fantastic football at times, but just can't buy a win.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of commitment there. There were, you know, you even take this scoreline tonight, 3-2. Obviously, I haven't seen any of that game or anything like that, but I know they were back in it at a draw and then went 2-1 down, 3-1 down, got back to 3-2. You know, so it shows there's somewhat of commitment going on there. You just mentioned, Kieran, you just mentioned Waterford there and what they're doing down in Waterford and how this manager has turned this around. And you're thinking, okay, there's a lot going there. Let's be honest, they're going one way and that's up. Now you're left with probably Drogheda won't be too far away from this and Finn Harps. Now, Finn Harps and Ollie Horgan know what to do in this scenario.
Yeah. They're experts.
They're not a team you want.
They could have a PhD in relegation battles at this stage. You know, they know what it takes, and they know when to hit form at the right time. Like, they're after getting a huge win over Shamrock Rovers there this evening.
Massive.
Like, whatever about the win, confidence boosting. But then again, the kind of players that they have now, you know, they used to Barry McNamee, Adam Foley, these lads are quality footballers. Like I say, Ollie's just having a dream with these lads because he has quality in his side. Like, and you know, this is the thing. It's whatever about the gap at the top being big, but like the fourth down, the quality is all out of balance now. Like, anybody could be anywhere. And that's the scary thing about it. And I'm sorry to say this, and I know that Europe was a lovely distraction at the time and whatever, but the exact same thing happened last year.
Yeah.
Where we qualified for Europe, everybody was on a great buzz of that, but our league form was absolutely abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of this shrug the shoulders attitude towards it. Oh, well, we're, you know, and I'm not saying the players were like that. I'm saying there was just an overall kind of feeling of, as long as we get fourth, we'll be fine. We shouldn't have been anywhere near. We shouldn't have been anywhere near that scrapping for fourth place. No way, like.
Now that seems like dreamland.
Yeah.
And you look at the fortunes of you know, consider Bow's start was shocking at one stage, and we're all going, oh, where's that going? Derry's start, atrocious. Couldn't buy a win at the start of the season. And as soon as Rory went in there, he's completely galvanized that home team around. And it seems to be he's just galvanized that kind of Derry spirit in and around the club, very much like we're seeing at Waterford at the moment. It's, you know, there's good news stories going around with a few other clubs, and unfortunately we don't seem to be there as part of that. And right now I don't think that's what you want. You know, you want the luck to start going your way, but we've been inept of luck all year. I don't think there's any point in waiting for it anytime soon.
But you have to, like, injuries have impacted us at various stages of the year. Like, Daniel Cleary getting that injury was absolutely, like, then you're looking at our chief playmaker and Patrick McElhenney getting a horror challenge up in Derry, and he's in a knee brace. I can't see him playing again this year. We don't know the current situation in relation to David McMillan, who David McMillan and Patrick Hoban kind of complement each other very well, because there's certain games you need Hoban and there's certain games you need McMillan. That was a McMillan night tonight, because he would have stretched that defence at something. So, but even bringing him on, as you said, Galley, you know, 70 minutes in, he would have ran at that back four all night. He would have played off their shoulder, and that would have just been, you know, would have been brilliant, because the lads would have been able to pump balls into him the whole night. And it's just, we don't have them options. And then you're talking about, like, Brian Gartland. Now, whatever about his defensive quality, his leadership qualities is huge. Whether he wears that armband or not, because we have lost, in effect, two of our captains this year. Like, we've lost Chris Shields and we've lost Brian Gartland. Like, they're two big presences and voices on the field that are needed. Yeah. And now, I'm not disputing that Andy Boyle is not a good captain. He is. He's excellent. He's been brilliant this year, led by example. But that team used to be full of captains, used to be full of characters. And at the moment, there's, like, I remember just a case in point last week in the mock test match, particularly in the first half, every 50-50 ball, every kind of half disputed decision, Moctis were shouting, roaring, cheering, clap, like they were getting on, like that stuff. Like I'm part of a management team of a GAA club at the moment. Like, you do that to get under the opposition skin. Like, the Dock were experts at that. Like, and they're not doing that anymore. That, like, that kind of grittiness needs to come back in. That competitive edge, big time, needs to come in.
Yeah.
And but it sets a tone. And it sets, you know, like a whole thing reverberating through the team. And it's just very difficult to pinpoint, you know, where we go from here.
Yeah. Galley, just before we bring in our guest tonight, you know, if we look for some glimmers of hope, I suppose, for tonight, you know, Daniel Cleary back starting a game. His passing was back to its exceptional self again. Good carrier of the ball. Good header. You know, we've missed that in the back line, haven't we? Because when Sonny is in there, especially the aerial threat can be, you know, he doesn't seem to be as decisive in the air, let's say.
Yeah, I think, look, at when Dan Cleary's playing, I know when we had him earlier when he first signed, he was kind of a, I won't say liability, but he did have a mistake in it. But, like, I mean, he's as solid as anything. Like, he's almost like a deep line playmaker. I mean, like, if we were really stuck, we probably could play him in the centre of the park or Chris Shields used to play, but... having someone like that at the back is excellent. But again, it's what's behind him again that puts them nearly on nails on the edge. And himself and Andy Boyle have been excellent. Yeah, look, McKeown was saying, someone like Brian Gartland, you know, even if he's not training with them, you know, never mind playing in the game, if he's not actually at training, he's injured. And that's a big thing we miss it. When you know, if you're playing at centre-half and you know you don't have cover on the bench, that has to be nails going out on the field. You know, it can't be easy for them. And they're down a lot of numbers tonight. But yeah, someone like Cleary, I mean, you know, slogging.
Even Mayo coming on there, like he looked like he wanted the ball. He could carry the ball, a big presence.
That's and that's the way you have to be now. Like, you know, if you're playing at the back, you've got to be able to play ball. There's no, like, the days of being just a normal standard, you know, hoof the ball centre half or defender or long gone. Like Kieran said at the start, Dumigan has been excellent. I think Dumigan, if we had another right back, I think Dumigan could play CDM. I think he's that good on the ball. I think he's an excellent footballer. And the last, probably, maybe not in the early parts of the season, but since Vinny's come in, he's been top class. And players like that will hopefully drive that into the other players. You know, hopefully they'll carry the team to the end of the season and we'll get the points we need, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Galley, I might let you bring in our guest tonight, if that's all right.
Not a problem. So our guests tonight are part of, unless you've been on another planet and you don't have social media, you'll definitely know who these people are. They're part of the SOS Save Our Sonia campaign. So we'd like to bring them on. I think it's for the second time for Serena and first time for Patsy Hoyt tonight. So welcome to the show, folks.
Well, lads, how are you?
Are we well?
Good. It's good to see you.
Better we got that bit of therapy out of us.
Yeah, no.
It's great to have you on.
thanks a million. Appreciate all your support, you know. Very grateful for what everybody has done for Sonny, you know. But the brains of the operation with this one, he's been organising for the last couple of weeks, guys. We're just doing another fundraiser to get Sonia back over. We couldn't get her back over for the next 3 months. It's a lot of money, as you all know, but we took 6 months treatment home with us. So we're trying to get her back over by the end of January, February. So we're just putting up another fundraiser. My father organised a golf classic in Manning Castle, and it's happening on... Dad, you take over?
Andrew, thanks for having us all here for a publicity. We really appreciate it, the family. We are having a golf classic on the 1st of October. It's on a Friday, and the flow will over into Saturday on the 2nd. And it's 120 per team for a 3-person team scramble. So everybody's going to enjoy it. There's plenty of prizes on the day. And if anybody would like to sponsor a tee box, we'd be more or less delighted, or give us a donation towards this good cause for Sonia. And there's 3 numbers at the bottom that you can contact myself, Daniel, or Sonia. But I am in charge of the timesheet, and I can put down the names of whoever wants to enter on the day. Now, I'd just like to say something on the game with Dundalk. I spent 10 years up in Oriel Park playing with Dundalk, and years ago there was a saying we used to have: if your keeper's beaten, the team's beaten. And I can see it by the defence, they haven't much confidence when the ball goes behind them, because they don't know what's going to happen. And you need someone there that has a good safe pair of hands, and you need someone there that can throw a ball out. And at the end of the day, if you have a good goalkeeper, you'll win the games. But unfortunately, now, you can make a good save and you can make a stupid mistake. And that's been right through the whole team. And I hope they get out of this relegation spot, because the Dundalk doesn't deserve to be in that spot at all. That's my opinion. Exactly. Like, yeah.
No, that's 100%.
No, you're 100%.
I just see your message coming in, just you're talking there, like Damien Smith just said, like team spirit, that's what's missing. It just seems to be missing that kind team of camaraderie. Right. And
then confidence builds through the team. And then
exactly.
When you haven't got that team spirit, the confidence drops.
Yeah.
And you need that team spirit. That's what wins games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like, you'd be well versed. And like, obviously, Paul would have played up at Oriel Park as well. So
he did, yes. Paul played at Oriel Park.
We'll get Kyla Serena. So Kyla plays with Cask and Wales. We can hook him up at Oriel Park.
Lads, if anyone wants to get in contact or any companies around the town to sponsor or any donate any prizes, is it okay to shout out 2 numbers? My father's number is 087-2246-574, and also Daniel, 087-057-6185. Or even if you want to email, guys, it's saveoursonia@hotmail.com.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate all the support everybody has done. But as they all say, I would like to thank the town. I'm proud of the town. And come on, the town.
Brilliant. We'll put all those details up in the post after this. I suppose just before you guys go, I suppose let's share the story with Sonia, because the last time we had you guys on, we were fundraising for the first time going to Mexico. Yeah. We had the derby match, we had everything going on, and you know, at the time I remember Sonia was nearly gobsmacked with the reaction to the town, how everyone rallied around her. So how did she get on when she went over there? I suppose tell us about how she reacted with the treatment, and where are we now with that then? I suppose
she was great. I don't know how she done it. It was a very intense treatment. She was very brave. Like, we were up from 6 in the morning. It could be 7 to 8 hours a day. She was doing this treatment for 6 days a week for over 3 weeks. She got a Sunday off. And I could tell you, it was just amazing what they've done for her over there. And we took all that stuff home. Like, I'll throw out a few things. Like, she's taken blue venom from a scorpio. Like, treatment like from a shark, spleen, you know what I mean? Like, she was doing hyperbaric chambers and ozone therapy. Like, the treatment was intense, but she had that fighting spirit in her. As you all know, she was a hell of a footballer, and it was just like Hogan and winning a match. She wanted to complete that treatment, and she done it. There was people that couldn't even complete it every day in and out, because it was hard in the body. And I was in with her some days, and there's days you're sitting going, oh my god, how is she going to feel today, you know what I mean? Is she going to be tired? Would she be able to keep going, you know? But she done it, and She got a great reaction from it. The doctors over there are very happy with her, you know, but right. We just couldn't, unfortunately, we can't afford to get her over in 3 months' time, but they're going to liaison with her, seeing how she is over the next couple of months. And we have the treatment home with us. We pay that extra money to get a home. So right. She's going to keep going with that for 6 months.
Okay.
Like she has our routine here. Like she's doing treatments here 7 hours a day too, you know. It's all timed out, plan, medicine, injections. She has her own ultrasound machines home, LED.
Wow.
It was all to do with heat lads over there that to help to shrink tumors and stuff. So we just have to keep going to keep her, just give her a wee bit longer, you know, that's what it's all about. But it's just sad that there's nowhere in Europe for this to help people, you know, because it's so expensive. But to give you an insight, those people over there that was diagnosed with it a month in advance, and they took no chemo or radiation, and their cancer's gone.
Wow.
So it's just a pity that, you know, she's gone so far, and it's just given her longer time, you know. But it's amazing that we can't have this in Europe, you know, and it's so expensive.
It's one of them. It's mind-boggling that it's not available. I'm sure it's expensive, but like when people are thinking up these things, how do they put a price on stuff like this? I don't like.
Yeah.
If this treatment works for people, I know it's easy for us sitting here saying it.
Yeah.
I never understand. Like if you need to put a price on something, we're doing it wrong. There's something going wrong somewhere.
They're making money here. It's an awful thing for me to say. They're making money here from chemo and radiation. That's an awful thing to say, like, you know, they're making money out of that. It's an awful thing to say, but I did ask them, why can't you just come to Europe? They said they won't approve it, but they're opening another place up in Asia, you know, that'll be their third clinic, you know. But it is sad that people have to go that far to get treated, you know, and it's so expensive. Like, we met a lot of people out there that were famous and they were wealthy people, you know, that could afford this. And you know, hearing their story, and they couldn't get over how far Sonia was, how far she was gone. And she was one of the strongest one among a lot of people out there, you know. It was mind-boggling how strong she was.
Yeah. I think, we kind of joked about it, even we're talking amongst the club of Castle Bears, like, if she goes out there on the taxi, like she did at football, she won't have any bother. You know, that's just, she's never been any different. You know, she does the road running, the Gaelic, soccer, all at the same time. Like, she played a semi-final of a cup for us. She was back at Castle Bells with two of the most bandaged up ankles and knees I've ever seen in my life.
I know. She was
like a mummy.
She would be in the clinic, Andrew. Like, if someone was down and out, she would be rallying them on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was amazing. We got in with a lot of people over there, and they were coming to sign thanks for your support. Like, and she would have been the sickest one there. Like,
the one thing that I've known from my experience of, like, my dad went to college with Sonia. They graduated the same class and you know, they would have been very good friends at the time. And the one thing that I've noticed about Sonia, irrespective of what's happened to her, nothing has fazed her. She's just got on with this. And that's a real testament to her character, that despite all these pitfalls and despite all these setbacks, she just keeps going forward, and she keeps, like, stronger people have just curled up and have just sat back, but not Sonia. And that's a testament to her. It's a testament to her character and her will to keep going forward. And as you said, it's her competitive spirit and the competitive spirit that she's always had. And she knows that if she gets some kind of inkling that she's going to beat this thing, she's going to do it. And she's a credit, and she's like, and I don't want to be, but she typifies everything that this town is brilliant about. Like, this town is never, ever down and out. As a town, as a whole, we're very proud people. And Sonia is a very proud person. And I can only say that, you know, on behalf of myself and my family, that we wish her every second of success going forward, you know.
That means a lot. Thanks a million.
That was nice, Kieran.
So, Serene, the first target, that was kind of done over, that was done in 48 hours, I think. Was it 36 hours, something like that?
Yeah,
so she got that, and it was 3 weeks away, and she's back. She's probably back. He's back over a month, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, he's back a month,
The new target is how much?
50,000.
So it's 50,000. Okay, so the new target's 50K, and you have until, like, that. So she's got treatment for the next, what is it? Is it 5 months?
Got treatment home, for the next 6 months. We're supposed to go over in 3 months, but we couldn't do it, so we took a lot. a lot of treatment home. I thought I was going to get banged up abroad. Sweating I was, but
the Dundalk too.
we took a lot home. You know, we've a lot all the treatment home here to keep her going, and you know, like she's incredible. I don't know how she does it, but proud of her. You know, as you say, that's the mentality of the sports in her, and every day I would say, Sonny, get in there and you score. You know, and she did. You know.
Andrew, I just wanted to say something to your dad. Probably remember this. It was only pointed out to me a few months ago. That Sonia done something in football that Ronaldo didn't do, Messi, or the great Pelé. She scored 3 hat-tricks in one game. And that's a record. 3 hat-tricks in one game, yeah. And that's a record.
Three balls for their dad.
She probably done it twice.
Well, I don't know.
Nine goals
in one game scored, and there's no footballer I can remember has ever done that. You know,
it's unbelievable.
And it's unreal when you think of it. You know, and that was pointed out to me by a very well-known football pundit, and I said, and I probably was at that game, you know, myself, but I never thought of it that way. You know,
she probably scores that many goals. You forget.
With the cast,
if you had kept the record, like it would have been like a phone book of goals. He scored like every game is guaranteed. It's guaranteed a goal at least.
That's the fighting spirit she has in her, you know.
She's
facing this like a true, like, you know, I can't put words to her what she's doing, but I don't know how she's doing this, but how she's carrying on with the strict diet she has gone. Yeah. She can't drink a plastic. Out of plastic bottles of water. She has a special water. Mm. We have to get her organic stuff, you know, that's not
the special diets and
not
drinks
sprayed or anything. It's dates and everything. Yeah. And we make drinks for her here, Susan drinks, that has to be all with special organic stuff, vegetables and that. And she takes them, and she's really, I don't know how she takes them. I couldn't take some of the things.
It's a hard diet.
Yeah. And she's sticking out, you know, she's hanging on there, like, for dear life, you know.
Yeah. And, like, she already has beaten the odds. She's still here, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she's proven that, you know, you can be here. If the government just please take this treatment in, you know.
Yeah.
They've done it, you know.
And just on the golf classics on the first, is it? Is there other events, or can people contact you if they want to, you know, if they have an idea for an event?
Yeah, if anybody has any ideas or want to get in to throw a fundraiser for us, Retton, just email at saveoursonia@hotmail.com, and Daniel could get in touch with anybody, you know. But we're just trying our best to keep going for Sonia, you know. We don't want to lose her. We want to hold on to as long as we can, you know.
Of course.
And I would just love to say a big, massive thank you to all the golfing men that plays golf with my father. They're great behind the scenes as well, you know, everybody there. And I really appreciate all their hard work. I don't want to say names and get myself into trouble.
They know who they are.
Thanks very much for supporting me, father, and the family. You know, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's an excuse for anybody now to, if they have clubs sitting at the back they haven't used, there's a chance to go out. Because I'm one of them people, so I'm going to have to dust
my golf. You're welcome.
I'll be there. I'll be hook or by crook. If I'm just playing with a pitching wedge the whole game, I'll be there. we might enter a town end team. Yeah. We'll put the same golf bag.
Thank you to Manning Castle for handing me.
There's trees there. You could tee off the
there. You'd be waiting till New Year's Day before I finish a round.
They might be still hitting the first
team. I'm surprised how good you can do when you start. You know, you never know what you're made of till you start.
Yeah.
But I have to say that for Manning Castle, for giving me the course for because I'm a member there for years, and they give me the course, and they couldn't do enough for the help towards this. Right. And we haven't thrown this now out to the members themselves yet, because there's another class to go on there that we're running to save for ourselves for the upkeep of the course. But when that goes out, it's going to be very big, this, you know, way it's going. People are responding left, right and center, and it's just unbelievable response that Sonia has, and how well she was got and how well she was liked, and we really appreciate it.
Really thanks
and thanks you thanks you for
thanks
having
lads
us. Andrew and Chris and Kieran. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. And you've come across very well, listen to you.
Yeah.
this is the 34th crack we've had at it. So we
finally got one right.
Yeah.
You don't get job as gay yet.
Look, there's plenty of matches of support coming in there. So like we say, we'll share all the details that you gave there now on our socials, so everyone can get involved from there. Guys, thanks so much. If we can do anything else for you guys, just feel free to drop back in at any time as well. And of course, pass on our regards to Sonia, and we wish her all the best in all the treatment she has coming up too.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Not at all. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Gally, you'll remember this. Like, I'd say one of Sonia's worst goals she ever scored was in that cup final. Like, I think it was just the tap in of tap ins, like, but it like trickled its way in. But yeah, I think you think you were beside me at that game. And
that would have been 2004, 2005.
Yeah, it was absolutely Baltic that morning in last
school.
But
she was the last person to score at Lansdowne Road.
No, because the men's cup final was on straight after.
Yeah, so she was the last lady to score.
Lady to score there. Yeah. Incredible. But even when you saw the messages of support that she received from the women's national team in recent weeks, it shows, you know, like that. And I know I said it there, but, you know, in my opinion, she was the first real kind of lady sports star that Dundalk had. I know at the time you had Grace Murray and other players and Sandra Lynch and things like that, but she was the rock star, so to speak. And look, I can't speak highly enough of her. You know, she helped my dad out an awful lot when they were in DKT together. So, you know, whatever help we can give her, please do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as much as we get bogged down in football and stuff like that, I think it's always good to get a good reality check. Things like that. And it's the football community that we all, you know, that's the whole reason for us setting up this podcast in the first place, is to have this kind of community around. I think, you know, things like raising money for Sonia and that, you know, it's what the football community, and Kieran, it's like you just said, it's what a community in Dundalk do so well. So look, I would encourage everyone to have a GoFundMe page set up again. We will share the link after that, after the show today, for it as well. So I just encourage it. If anyone can give anything, please do get involved in whatever way you can. Thanks as well for everyone with plenty of messages coming in here for Sonia too. So I'm sure she'll see most of this, and the family do as well. So it thanks so much for that too. We'll go back to football matters, lads, and we're coming into a couple of crunch matches here. We discussed this before. You know, you're kind of looking next Saturday now at this Longford game, and it's a big one. It could be a crushing blow for them if we were to pick up points out of it, and then it also flips the other way for maybe not so much as for Longford, because they could be just too far behind, but for the teams in and around us. If Longford go and get something from us, that could really consolidate us to this playoff spot. It's, you know, it's getting really, you don't want to say it each week to say it's a six pointer, but it's kind of getting to that point now, isn't it, Gally?
We said it here 2 weeks ago, and I kind of said it, I wasn't even being tongue in cheek, but I did think in the back of your mind, you're talking in your ears here. But we did say that game against Longford, if the results go the wrong way for us, I think Finn Harps winning tonight. The results could—it's not that they could have went worse. We could have been better. But when we draw games like that tonight, it feels they go better. But yeah, it's you can't even look any forward in Longford now. That's where we are. Like, you know, I don't even know who we're playing after that, because I've been set in my brain that's D-Day. So if we're not out of the woods then, or close to it,
I think again, it's the back-to-back games in with Sligo.
Yeah, like we had Marge on here a couple of weeks ago, Stephen Marr, and they've been excellent. He said it, like they've been robbed of some results, and he's very strong in the result against Dundalk in particular over there. They should have won the game, so these boys would be well up for this game. It doesn't matter where they are, they're going to finish bottom of the league, probably. Well, mathematically, probably are. But like they would be more than up for this game to right or wrong that they got you in the season. Because we all knew watching the game they should have won it. You know, we completely robbed the game off them.
Yeah.
And Margie was hell bent, and I think they'll be looking to put it right. So it could be a very, very tough game.
But you only have to look at the games that they've played against Shamrock Rovers. Those three games, if I'm not mistaken, were all won by last minute.
Minute jobs.
You know, that shows the kind of resilience that team has. And Dundalk at the moment were that team scoring those 94 minute goals up until 2 years ago. Like, that's what they were like. Yeah. You know, and it's now gotten to a point where you kind of have to sit there and say, like, they have to start playing, and they have to start playing now. Like, forget about the cup. Forget about that. This is about consolidating, getting yourself out of that. And what if Vinny is given an opportunity to stay on next year, he has to clear out what he perceives as dead wood. He has to basically go to the owners and say, look, I'm looking for A, B, C, D, E, and F. Like, I need these players in order. And there needs to be bringing in players of perceived stature from foreign leagues is all well and good, but this league is completely different. And as I spoke about off air, name me, apart from maybe Joey and Doe, one really successful foreign import that this league has truly had.
Yeah.
Like, they're few and far between. And as I was saying to you, like, Christian Adarjan was only getting up and running before he left, and now he's not even playing. He's opened up an ice cream shop in Budapest. I'm not joking. That is what's happened.
He has not.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruno's Gelateria. Yeah.
Is he not playing at all?
No.
I'm going off script here. That's ridiculous. What? Like, how is he not kicking ball for somebody?
Yeah.
He was in Serie C for a while.
He was in Serie C with a club called Vitra Santala. They were supposed to be playing in Serie B. They got relegated to Serie C. He had a great first half of his season. Then the new manager, as is always the case in Italy, there's about six managers in a year. I think he fell foul of one of them and was never really played again. And I think he's just given up. But like, you're looking at Ravis Jovkauskas has really impressed me this year. Now, I have to say that. But when he was playing in the wing back, it wasn't really working for him. But when he went back into that kind of Sean Gannon type style of play that Vinny likes, where he was able to bomb forward, that he was much more solid, and that was brilliant. But like, in reality, I think we need to start looking at look at Bowes. Like, Bowes, apparently there is a shed. Now, I'd love to see this shed in Dannemount Park, where it's a plethora of paper of all these scouting paper that Trevor Crowley and Keith Long have. And this is their recruitment process. They know exactly if A leaves, they've got ready replacements going. Like, that's what Dundalk need now.
Yeah.
But it has to start with a manager that has an assistant. Look, absolutely lovely in Burns, but I think he's just there at the moment to fill a stopgap. Vinny needs to have a very solid background team around him, like he had the first time. And then, take it from there. And then if he's able to say to people, look, I've got these men behind me, I want you to come join, this is where it's going to, it will entice people. But you're right, Gally. Next week, you can't look beyond it. You have to get the win there and then, and take it from there. And hopefully the momentum takes, because Sligo aren't really on a good run. If you were to take points off them as well, you can take the collective sigh of relief.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they only drew with away to Drogs tonight. I just had a quick look at the fixtures there. So it's Longford, then Sligo, then Harps back-to-back, and then Sligo again. So, but this is the point. Psychologically, you need to get something out of the first time you play Sligo and the first time you play Harps, because it's going to be the exact same repetition again. Players are going to know each other inside out at this stage. So it's down to that little extra percentage of, well, they still beat us last time, and that can be the little percentage you need to get over the line. But Kieran, my mind is absolutely blown now by thinking of this secret room in Bowes, and I just got this, paper everywhere and pins going to everything. Yeah. It's like something I've seen on the dark web now or something.
What was that? A Beautiful Mind. You know?
Yeah, that's literally
like,
what
that, that's like, yeah. That's old school. Like, you know, like the fact that it's paper as well, it's not on a laptop. That's the way to have it. It's just so simple. Yeah. It's just like, you know, it's yeah. That's why they've got, that's why they're able to churn out these people, these players all every season.
But yeah, then, but like Kieran says, they probably have a backup for their backup player. So yeah, there's their initial target, but each time their initial target is like, there's, you can see there's certain criteria, they're young, hungry players, but they're key players in key positions. And every time they lose somebody, you know, and you think of like, you know, we've taken Dara Leahy and Daniel Kelly off them, and you think, you know, any other team would struggle with those, but yet they've gone, well, that's fine, he's gone, let's use that to reinvest into this player, this player, and this player. And if we sell them all, send them on, we're going to make money or whatever. And either way, it's the reputation and what they have, you know, with St. Kevin's and stuff like that. We talked about it before, Gally. It's a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Absolute conveyor belt of talent. And you look at, you know, the under 21s today, and it was, I think they had two players today, was it? Dawson Devoy was there, and who else was?
But you look at those players, like the likes of Dawson Devoy and Ali Coote, like they didn't look absolutely anywhere out of place in Europe this year.
No.
Because they're comfortable on the ball. They play to a particular system. You know, Keith Long, I think the Bows must have sniffed that there was a threat coming, because as soon as Vinny was sacked, they signed him up on a 3-year contract. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, because they knew that, like, but you're looking, like you spoke there during the week about blueprints. Like, St. Pat's have started to develop a blueprint under Stephen O'Donnell. Yeah. Bows have really, like, they've got the blueprint, the foundations, they nearly have the roof on, you know, but they're taking standards which Dundalk and Cork and now Shamrock Rovers have set, and now they're saying, right, we're going to take the best bits and envelop it in our culture, and let's see where it takes us. And that's exactly what's happened, and this is what I'm talking about. Like, you know, you've got your top three teams, and then everyone's kind of in the middle, but like, sooner rather than later, like, it's starting to become a very, very competitive league, because this fostering of a culture of you have to be competitive by playing the right way is starting. And Finn Harps is an example of that. Finn Harps, a couple of years ago, you'd be sitting there going, oh, you know, they're going to hoof merchants and Ollie's going to have them battering rams, and they're starting to play football because they've now seen, well, this is how we do it.
Yeah. But because of that, then I think because Ollie has them playing a better brand of football, I think he's been able to attract better players all of a sudden. They're playing better. I've seen a couple of comments actually come in about Finn Harps. And it's like, you know, I think it was actually Dan Pope had said that's Harps' 6 wins on the bounce in all competitions now. And the previous one, that was 12. So like, Ollie, look at how he started the season and he's ending it in the same way. And that's how he manages to stay clear of this every year nearly.
And I would love for him to come out someday and say, you know, we're going to qualify for Europe, because everything, he downplays absolutely everything, because he keeps everything firmly on, you know, irrespective of whether they're in relegation trouble or heading for Europe, he downplays everything to keep everybody's feet on the ground, so that there isn't, he doesn't say anything that's going to harbour pressure. I think he's just letting the boys play. And that's, that, you know, they're playing with that kind of wee bit of freedom, which is really working.
Yeah. The scary thing is, though, Kieran, we were talking about blueprint and where we go, you know, as in building and having things for the future. My big fear with Dundalk Football Club is at the moment is, what are we? And because if you were to describe us this year, we're a fallen giant. We're nowhere near, and you touched on it there, the tail end of last year, it was something similar, but we got forward, we got into Europe, we also qualified into the group phase of the Europa League, and that kind of glossed over a lot. We think, look, we got through that, skin of our teeth, we won the cup, brilliant, that really set us off then, and we're thinking, okay, we got through that one, let's build on this. No one thought that we would have a complete dismantling of that team the way we had.
Yeah.
Then you think of the poor recruitment we've had in then on top of that. So, like, I think, you know, when you think of Val to come in, Ryan to come in, Mayeo now as well, young Hanratty there. Like, there's real good talent in and around this, young good talent around it. But that only works if it's complementing real strong you know, and I'm thinking about how Bows are playing with this freestyle, you know, go, you know, you can see that they've been told by management down as that that's your playground, go and play on it, be as expressive as you want, we will back you 100% on this, and it's all coming through in a lovely style of football now. Real encouragement in the players. We don't have that atmosphere, we don't have that in any way of an environment at the moment to even talk about a blueprint. Like, we're talking about how do we just stay in this division, because there's teams like, we just talked about Finn Harps there, they know what to do in this scenario, but at the moment I think Finn Harps are thinking, let's just get a couple more wins, we don't need to think about that anymore. Let's add on and let's kick on from next year. We had Derry in a bad situation, Rory came in and went, no, this is my club, this is how I feel about Derry City, let's really get that going again. And he's brought in, you know, real good, strong people from a couple of players from the Irish League as well, and really shored that up and knew what he needed. You're looking now at Waterford, the same. We're not of any of the ilk of any of those teams, and that's a real worry, isn't it?
It's a massive worry. The big worry that I have is that what's happening away from the club, away from the first team, and I'm talking about decisions that have been made. Like, if we're to believe the things that have come out, you would be extremely worried about, and I know this is probably going to, but it's the mental state that these players are coming into games. Mm-hmm. Like, these players are coming into games in a situation in which they've got all this noise in a vacuum that in reality is completely distracting them. It's demoralizing the whole situation. And then you have the dismantlement of the foundations of what was the most successful team that this country has seen, you know, in a long, long time. The fact that contractual negotiations were not done before the last game of the season, before the last game, which was the Arsenal match, led a situation in which other clubs were able to swoop in and offer contracts to players before Dundalk even opened up terms. Like, yeah. You know, how in God's name did a company, like, and I'm sorry to say this, a hedge fund company whose business it is to make money, not foresee the fact that talented players were going to be offered contracts elsewhere? Mm-hmm. And it's all well and good for the love of the club and this, that and the other, but in reality, it shouldn't have been left to somebody who, and I'm led to believe that one player was offered a 6-month contract. Like, how did that person not know that the basic standard PFAI contract was 1 year minimum? Like, yeah. How did he not know that? Like, the legalities of that is alone was frightening.
Yeah.
And then, but that reverberates through the rest of the team where, well, if he's only being offered 6 months, what the hell am I going to be offered?
Yeah.
And then you come into this year where there is a complete culture change in terms of recruitment. Players were signed. And then, you know, there was like, you know, the collective unit and the culture that was there. And this, you know, the behavioral state of coming into games knowing we are Dundalk, we are winners, the chess is out, we know what we're all about. There was a period where the players had to get to know each other, communication difficulties, language difficulties, all these different things. You're in the middle of COVID, you're playing behind closed door. All these factors, it was a ticking time bomb. And... yeah. I think at this stage now, I know that Dan McDonald said it last week that that Mike Tracy is coming back, is working alongside Vinny in an advisory role. That can only be beneficial because Mike, when he was here, he kind of had his finger on the pulse. He knew exactly what was it about. But also, this guy is like he was at the time a trader for Pete Six. Like there's a high degree of intelligence there as well. You know, now I'm not saying that Bill's an idiot, but before we go down that line, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that in order to run a club, you have to have a particular business acumen, but you have to know the lay of the land as well. And I think if Pete Six were to kind of strike off this year, see how the end of the season goes, they're going to have to do a couple of things. They have to get a fully structured board. Like board of management in place, not just one person or two people making decisions. And the staff at the club at the moment, they need to know exactly what specific roles they're at, who they're operating to, who they're speaking into. And, you know, if it's Jim Magilton at the top, he needs to say, right, I'm here. The organizational structure of the entire company going from Jim Magilton all the way down to volunteers, and I'll get to that in a second, that all needs to be put in place before the start of next year. So everybody knows exactly what the role is, and there's no crossovers, and there's no this, well, that's not my job, and that's my, and then things fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think now there needs to be a massive, massive recruitment drive in terms of, if you want to get the community back on board, you need to start getting people back on board as well. And I know there'll be a lot of people who would be very upset over the fact that they have been relieved of their positions, and it's been a crying shame that that's happened, because you talk about a culture and identity that's been just completely taken away with the fact that for a long time, the volunteers and Pete Six kind of did work in harmony, and there's been a complete shattering of that. And, you know, there needs to be a complete reshape of the club internally. And then, but if you've got all of that organized on that side, and then you start getting like, and there's kind of a good feeling from that side, it's going to reverberate through the team, because there has to be that harmony the whole way along. And I think, you know, like Jim Magilton, I know he's had his critics and whatever, but in terms of sponsorships with the community, the engagement that he's brought in that regard has been very, very positive this year. And I think if he's given an opportunity to continue that, and he kind of branches off into other projects, you could see something very special happening. But once again, the community, once again, the supporters need to get back in. And that supporters club as well, the 1903, I think they have a very big say in how this goes forward, because they have over 100 members now. That's 100 voices that they are now representing. They need to keep that momentum going, so that there's a collective voice that they're able to bring forward to Pete Six next year and say, look, we've got these people behind us. What can we offer you? And I'm sure there's people within that 1903 that would have particular expertise in particular areas that could help the club next year going forward.
Yeah, I don't know how I respond after my rant last week.
Well, see, in fairness, Chris, you know, I spoke to you about this during the week. You know what I mean? It's a disgrace. That's the only way to put it. If there's a local community element that we're offering, and you made it very clear that, you know, you were willing to change your terms and conditions in order to meet the needs of the club and stuff like that. Like, where do you go? Like, you know, like, and I know that Gavin McLaughlin put out a tweet this week, and he sometimes he just has to turn his phone off, you know, because no matter what he does, God love him, it seems to be the wrong decision. Yeah. You know,
I
like
he's
on a hiding to nothing, and I feel sorry for him, because Gavin's produced such fantastic content, and he's a great guy, but he's kind of the punching bag at the moment, and that's not fair on him either.
Yeah,
you know, like there's people higher up that need to start taking serious responsibility for what's happening, and they need to put that. And Pete Six, and I know that a letter was sent out in response, and I have my opinions on that as well. But I think what needs to happen really is that Pete Six need to put their hands up and say, okay, we have made errors, we're going to fix it. Because I'm gonna finish up on this. Dermot Keely said, when this club rocks, this town rocks. Like, and he's always said that. This club means so much more to people than they will ever envisage. It's the lifeblood of so many, and they need to start realizing that, and very, very quickly, because if they don't get this right and quick, people will stop coming. People will stop buying jerseys. People stop buying season tickets. And commercially, they will become unviable, and commercially, they'll become untouchable.
Yeah. Gally, look, to bring you in on this, I think it's exactly, and we touched on it even last week. And, you know, you're looking, actually, it was also James Rogers this week said on the press box, he's like, you know, season tickets were always a staple of Christmas presents for people. Under the current relationship that maybe the community and the fans sometimes have with the club, like, that could be a real like that's a banking, you would say, for the club of, you know, 500 to 600 people every year. That may not be a guarantee next year if things continue. And the reason I say that is when you look at clubs like Kieran's just mentioned one or two there, you know, what Pats are doing in their community, what Daniel Lambert does with Bowes, you know, he's very inclusive in that community. You know, you think of their shirt sponsors and everything else. I know Shells, is it last week or this week, they've talked about their new football management course that they have, or football business management, I think it is, where they're bringing in, you know, people who will learn how to run a football club while getting an education in Shells and stuff like that. And they're doing loads in and around that area as well. Then you look at us. What's the last real community involvement project we've done?
The jersey.
Oh, your point.
Jersey. That's been a while. Like I called it out on, and I know, I think Frank Carlin said it on the comments tonight, like when I was on with the lads during the week on the press box, I said, we decided to have a juvenile jersey with no sponsor on the front of it.
Yeah.
Why wasn't that a local sponsor?
There's plenty of clubs that have dual sponsorships on their jerseys.
Yeah, like, but we can't put a betting sponsor onto a juvenile jersey.
Yeah.
So we just decided to have nothing on it.
Yeah.
Why wasn't Sonia put on it?
Yeah, the Maria Goretti Foundation out in Lordship, like that
and Ruben is still involved in that charity as well. Out there, he's often raising money for them and being in and around. Like there's things that the club can actively do to get into the community, to bring the community with it. And that's what needs to be done. Rehab care there, and David Moore said, we used to do loads with them. Yeah. And I know COVID probably doesn't help as well, but that could have gone on a jersey.
Yeah,
you know, there's loads of little things like this, but we're not engaging in the community like other League of Ireland clubs.
Yeah, and that's probably the saddest part of it. Like we can harp on about the football, and but we're saying it almost since day one of the podcast. And even look at it, COVID has its part to play, but we can't use COVID as an excuse all the time. You know, it's you know, going by the government's recommend, October 22nd, we can't mention it. You know, it'll be all be over that. So now we're back to right. Let's see what the club can do for the community. But it's been a sticking point all season. We've mentioned it. There just seems to be, it's always been there since Peak Six took over. You know, they come in kind of a blaze of glory. The circus had rocked into town, and they had their meeting in the YDC, and then nothing. Closed doors. No, we don't need to know. I've said it before. We don't need to know. Like, we've no right to know what people have been paid. You know, we've no right to know what's going on behind closed doors. But when players are going out doing that on the pitch, and there's nothing coming out from the club on any form, like even pre-COVID, there was nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of have to start a question, and things like the season tickets, you'd almost feel that you need to, not that they would, but you nearly think supporters would maybe go, right, we're going to call the bluff here and we're not going to buy any season tickets and see what happens. And that won't happen. I mean, look, season tickets and fair play to them every season. They buy their tickets and, you know, even if they know they won't get to all the matches. But I think you will see a few this year say, no, well, I'm going to wait and see what happens. And because we are notoriously late at doing stuff. Like even releasing a jersey this year, like how long did we wait for a kit to be released? You know, and it was just, everything's just so lackadaisy. It's like everything's an afterthought. You know, you mentioned the kids' jersey. Like it's not something that was mentioned earlier. It's a great idea. But again, oh yeah, maybe we'll do that. It's hindsight. I keep going back to this hindsight. Mm. You know, and it's such a sad thing because it is a community club. And yeah, it's out of the way. It's a little bit up from, you know, the centre of the town, but
still relatively close to town, though, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not like you're going out into this, you know, it's not like you're going to the sticks, you know, you don't have to get the car to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think it's magnified because of the results on the pitch. It's definitely magnified. I mean, look, we said it before, success kind of masked it. But now it's come to the fore. Now it's got to be rectified. Now, look, if it takes a couple of seasons to get it, that's fine. But I think what people just want is just a little bit of communication, a little bit of, look, we know we can't get up there with COVID, but next season that won't be a problem. So you'd like to think something will come out, something will be planned. I know they've got people walking up there, there's the partnerships, we've got more partnerships than goals. You know, that's where we're at the minute. And like, you know, they're all great for local business, they're all great for that kind of crack. But it doesn't engage the fan as much. And that's probably just what we're missing at the minute. Because when results are like that, and we're on podcasts, like, how would we have got 34 episodes and we were top of the league? Probably not. Like, you know, like
where would you have gone? Hang on.
Yeah, but what would we have talked about every week if we were just murdering teams? You know, like.
But at least we'd be happy.
This is it. But that element missing. And look, that could be partly due to American owners not flying in, not here all the time. Look, but we can't use that as an excuse. There's people up there. There has been people up there that are no longer there. And, you know, that in itself is just, it's beyond unprofessional. It's crazy.
I also think that for certain situations, they've been kind of reactive instead of proactive. Like, there's things that they could have foreseen that could have came, you know, they could have dealt with just take the jersey there. Like, they would have known when they were reducing the jersey, the Bet Regal wasn't going to be allowed on a juvenile jersey as per rules. Like, somebody could have tapped somebody on the shoulder and said, listen, why don't we do a community thing here and get people. Like, if I bought two of the purple jerseys because I got McGrath, funny enough, I got Jamie McGrath's number put in the back when he signed it before he left, and I have another one. But you have that because one of them is like a collector's item. It's a once off. Like, if you were able to turn around and say to me, like, oh, we're going to produce a once off juvenile jersey, I'll never fit in it. Like, you know, but you'd buy it anyway, because if it's going to say a certain amount of proceeds are going to go to a local charity, then you know, you're on a winner. And I think even you look, talk about all these partnerships. Why aren't they doing a simple situation is like XXI, I'm just going to use them on a match day, go in and wear your jersey and you get 50 cents off your ice cream. But that's going to get people through the door. Like, go into, you know, for the sake of argument, Rock Salt is another partnership. You know, wear your jersey on a match day, you get, I don't know, an upgrade in a latte from a small to a large or whatever. You know, things like that engages community business, but also is getting the fans involved. Like, there's all these different things that they really need to start, you know, looking at long term of how they've got all these partnerships set up, how they're going to get the fans engaged in them now. But they really need, I think when all this kind of blows over and whatever, they really need to sit with the fans and need to engage with them very, very quickly, or else they'll lose them. They could lose a lot of them forever.
The thing is, it won't take a lot of work.
No.
Like, it won't, like, it'd be a simple one, like meeting little ideas. It's not going to be.
But the longer it goes, Gally, it's going to take more. This is the problem. You know, we're saying that there's, like, if you go back from the protests at the start of this year to, you know, you can keep going back and back, and there's kind of like, this was a little bit less than last year and a little bit less than the previous year. Now it's got to a point where we're kind of going on, Jesus, like, you know, we really need to kind of do better here now. And I think it's just got to a stage now where people are, it's very evident that their community engagement in particular has just hit rock bottom now. Like you say, they just need to address it, come out, because what was making it worse was the statements from Bill at the start was, oh, you know, do we, are we not, we believe that we're engaging with the community and they're right behind us. You know, we're going, what? No, we're literally, there's protests outside telling you the opposite. You know,
I know
this is the problem. So, like, we're not fools. And that's what the owners and people making decisions in the club need to realize. We're not fools, we're fans. We'll draw a line at some stage if we had to. We don't want to. Nobody wants it because we love the club. We've all been here through thick and thin. I'm looking at the three of us in particular here. And we've all been here through thick and thin.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's plenty of people watching and listening to this who can go further back, lads, than we can. And it's been on highs and lows as well. Yet they're still here. Why? Yeah. Because the club was always there for them. We said it last week, you know, 500 tickets didn't sell out on that morning for the Moctis match. There was a time when you were looking for a European ticket, there was a queue outside the bloody door.
Yeah, and I remember James Rogers, funny enough, he asked me to get a ticket for his dad and he wasn't able to do it. So he asked me to go down, and I remember going down, and there was a Mal Branigan at the time went out and counted the the people. Yeah. How many are you getting? Da, 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 da. And then he went to a certain point and he said, I'm really sorry. You're not going to get a ticket. And he actually came back up and he saw me and he goes, I'm actually embarrassed by this. He says, I'm embarrassed that we cannot provide the stadium, the seats, the tickets for the, and he had, like, he was imploring him, like, and people were like, like, there was a genuine disappointment. And I remember, like, I think, like, Kenny was standing outside going, he couldn't get his head around this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he couldn't get his head around people queuing up on a Sunday morning at 8 a.m. to get tickets. Like, you know, but that's what this town has always been about. Like, you only have to look at, we got relegated on Easter Sunday and the following week we packed out Talca Park for a cup final in 2002. Yeah. Like, you know, like, it's all these kind of things. And the same people, like, I understand that there's people gone since then. Like, one of them is Damien McConnon, who passed away a couple of weeks ago. Like, he sat beside me at that cup final. Like, yeah. You know, all these people, and some of them are still there. Like, Gally and myself have known each other for, and yourself, Chris, we've known each other for years because of the club. Mm-hmm. Like, we're friends because of it. And, like, you're just, like, it's heartbreaking that there could be a situation that we could be having coming back around the 22nd of October, and you could have a situation like, was it the Bray match, the last game before the playoffs? It was like 100, you could almost count the people in the ground.
Yeah.
We don't want that. We can't have that. Yep. You know, it needs, you know, there needs to be a response. Yeah. No,
that's the thing. Look, we'll end up going on another rant again, the three of us, to just close off business for tonight. Thanks everybody for who has messaged in for the Man of the Match competition. Gally, I'll come to you for yours, I suppose. It looks like it's a landslide one direction, but
yeah, I mean, Sam Satter was excellent. Dunwigan was excellent, but I mean, consistently over the last couple of weeks, I don't know if he's got many player of the year awards from us, but player of the season. God, I'm way ahead of myself. Player of the match, but Andy Boyle, absolute warrior. Like, and just consistent. And look, we spoke to before, he's still playing with a bit of an injury.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute beast. Yeah. Look, we don't need to harp on about it too long, but yeah, Andy Boyle all day.
Yeah.
Kieran. Leadership, consistency, strength, everything. Andy Boyle, without a question.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's probably about 70% of the messages in tonight as well. There was one or two for Stanton. Dunwigan got a shout there then as well.
But he's 7 out of 10. He's like the Dennis Irwin of that side. No matter what happens, you could put him up front and he'd still do a job for you. He's just probably, that kind of player.
Could have tonight and we would have got more. I think for our winner of Tony's Pizzeria tonight, lads, I think this person keeps saying to me that she wants to make sure she wins genuine, that she's forever a bridesmaid and never a bride when it comes to this competition. So I think we'll finally give this to Jane McDermott tonight. she keeps giving out to me every week that she hasn't won a pizza yet she's commented in all season long. So tonight's the night. The result wasn't what we want, Jane, but look, we've got a 15-inch pizza from Tony's Pizzeria to gloss over that result slightly, maybe, and make things a little bit better for the weekend. Last point to call, lads, is just back swiftly to the Longford game on Saturday. We're going to do a score prediction. Kieran, I'll go with you first this time. I know you're going to do wishful realistic,
it's going to be a 2-1 win. I want it in the 93rd minute. I want to head off frigging Alessio Abibi's arse after he comes off from a call. I don't care. I just want the win, but I think 2-1. Absolutely 2-1. Yeah.
Gally.
I think I got it right this week, did I?
You did?
I think I nailed one.
Did you? I think you're closing in on Steph's record here, yeah.
I think we'll win. I don't think we win by much. I'm going to go 1-0. I think we'll keep a clean sheet. Like, I think there's a comment up there. We haven't kept a clean sheet. When was it?
It's been hard in July.
It's meant to start. So look, maybe it'll all come to a nice tilt next Saturday night, isn't it?
Yeah.
Saturday. Yeah.
And I like the way you move.
A cautious 1-0. Yeah.
The only problem with that, of course, is all the rest of the results are in. It puts more pressure on us.
But does it, though? Because at least they know where the lay of the land is. And they know, right, we just have to go out and win. Like, I know they have to. But
you're second bottom here, and guess what?
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, no, but you understand my kind of thinking and rationale behind it, sort of.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking 1-0 as well. And much like here, and I will take this, somebody 89 minutes, slice the ball, it hits an upright, comes back, hits the keeper on the back, hits off the other post, and eventually goes across the post. I'll take that. That's exactly what we need. We just need some sort of luck. I'll take it any which way that it falls. I just think we need three points very, very soon. Yeah. We just need to finally to get something in. Frank Harlan's going for Yates and goal, and we win 2-0, lads, so. There we go. Could be right. Could be right. Maybe it's the only way we're getting a clean sheet, Frank. You could be onto something there. last port of call for tonight is the updated league. So obviously Rovers are still top on 50 points. Pats, 50 points also with their win tonight over Longford. Two games, Rovers have two games in hand over them. Third is like Rovers with a 0-0 draw at Drogheda tonight on 39. 2 points behind is Derry City. And following that then is Bowes, 3 points behind that. But three games in hand over Derry now for Bowes. Sixth place then is Drogheda 34, Finn Harps 32 with their win tonight over Rovers. And then we have a 3-point gap then to Waterford, 29 points, and then ourselves on 28. Then a fairly substantial gap there, lads, I suppose, to Longford is the only good thing.
But we only have to look at fourth and ninth. Like, there's 9 points between the teams. Like, that's just, it shows the tightness of this league this year. And,
If there's an Excel sheet needed to be shown to Peak Six on how the transfer policy didn't work, just look at the point difference from Rovers to Dundalk and then compare it to last season.
Mm-hmm.
And the season, like, if there was ever a spreadsheet needed just to show, look at that, just print that out. There you go. That's the season in a nutshell.
But also, like, 35 goals conceded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I can't remember
the last time that Dundalk were in negative goal scoring.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't, you know.
They hit 100 goals under Kenny.
Yeah, in 2015. That was the year that they lost only one game against Bowes in July. In the entire year. Like,
says
you know, and that was the year that Kenny was disappointed with that. You talk about standards. Like, there's your standard. Yeah. You know, you have to remember, like, and James has said, and James Rogers said it a couple of times, a draw was a crisis a couple of years ago. Like, a draw, you know, you'd be almost like trying to get interviews with players. It'd be like trying to pull, you know, chicken teeth. You know, they didn't want to talk to you. They were that disgusted. But, you know, we have to get back to that. We have to get back to that kind of culture of success, and but that is all, as I keep saying to you, that's all got to do with mental states of players going into games. I can't keep repeating myself. Sorry.
Gally, Dan Pope wants a fundraiser match with Oriel up in Oriel Park with a Dundalk 11 versus Bell's teams from under 7s up to under 13s. And Bell's side.
That's it. Yellow and blue all the way. Yeah, that's a good man, Dan. Dan, you can organize that.
Yeah. Get your figure out there, Gally. Look, thanks so much, I suppose, for yourselves, lads, for joining us in, for Sonia's family just giving us the update. We will throw out some information on links after this on a post as well. Just before we finish up, I suppose, as a way to finish today, I just want to say thank you so much to everybody who actually reached out to me over the past week. I wasn't expecting the whole reason I didn't do it to get any attention or anything like that from it. So the sheer volume of support that I've got from everybody, I really do appreciate it. Most people that I would know very well, some people I don't know very well at all, and still reached out through social media. So I just want to say that, you know, I really do appreciate that. It shows how much of a community there is there. And yeah. I just wish our club could just tap into that a little bit more and maybe realize it. We would be in a better place. So look, I just kind of wanted to end on that tonight, just to say thanks so much to everybody for reaching out. It did mean a lot to me. Hopefully that's that put to bed. I'm not going any more rants anymore. I'm going to sit back into the background and not be, I don't like the spotlight very much on anything like that. So I just want to say thank you. I just wanted to put it on record. And look, we just got to get our heads down now. We get to Saturday's match, and you know, we got to pull something out of that one. So until then, gents, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and come on the town.